Hello and welcome. I'm Richard from VentureGrab Podcast, and this is episode 185 featuring the Mole Catcher. And today is the 10th of September 2018. Now, I've got lots to fit in this show today, starting, of course, with the diary, which there's not a huge amount that I've done this last week, actually. After that, I have what the Garden Days calendar suggests to do for this next week. And then after that, I've got Jeff Nichols, the Mole Catcher, and a little chat I had with him. Now, don't feel because it's a Mole Catcher, you've got to turn off because you're against it. Let's have a listen to what he says. I'll come to that in a bit anyway. After that, I've got a message from Lee, the Skinny Jean Gardener. And then I'm going to announce the Facebook group competition winner. And then I've got another competition that I'm going to start running. So we've got a lot to get through, as I said. Let's take a look and see what I've done this last week with the diary. Well, last week was another pretty hectic week. Tuesday, I popped down the allotment and I went around all the grass paths with the strimmer, just cutting the grass paths down, and it makes it look so much better just doing that, doesn't it? After that, I managed to harvest a few of my cider apples, and I've put those into storage for the time being. But once all my cider apples are off the tree, which is a Kingston Black variety, I'll be making some cider, and hopefully this year I will get more than one pint. Now, Wednesday I was at home and I potted up my ginger plant, my turmeric plant and my cardamom plant. Now, these have all been grown in little pots and I felt it was time to pot them up, especially after talking to, I forget her name, but a person at Chili Fiesta who I bought the ginger plant from. So I've just potted these up into 8-inch pots with multi-purpose compost in them. So nothing difficult at all, really. Just from one plot into another, a bit bigger. Now, Thursday, I moved my seedlings around. And these are now pretty hardened off, or most of them are anyway. And they're going to be planted out very, very soon. I'm just waiting for the plants to be a bit stronger before they go out into the ground. That being said, I've been monitoring them quite a bit lately and they're actually putting on quite a bit of growth, and they're certainly looking like they're going to be quite strong. Now, I also noticed that a couple of my tomato plants were suffering or had early signs of blight. So I basically cut those two down and took off all the tomatoes and got rid of the plants. These are all at home actually. The rest will still be growing, and if they get blight, they will come down as well. I'm recognising I've planted plants far too close together, which has made things difficult to manage. I'm trying to squeeze too much in a small area. Now, Saturday, I had a day out and I was at the Rumsey Show, which is an agricultural show in Rumsey, as well, the name suggests. There wasn't a huge amount of gardening things to go on here, but there was plenty of agricultural stuff. And I also managed to get a chat to Jeff, who is the Mole Catcher, that you'll hear very, very shortly. Now, Sunday is normally the day I go down to the allotment, but because my family had a very special event going on that I had to attend, and it was an all-day event, I had to go. And well, this is actually on my grandfather's side of my family, or my mum's side, I should say, I suppose. But my grandfather, I've mentioned him many times as being my inspiration for gardening, or where I get the gardening bug from. Well, I've learned that my great-grandparents, my grandfather's parents, they owned and run a nursery in West Sussex, a little village called West Chiltonton. Now, this was way before my time. I never met them. I never even knew about this until yesterday. But I found that really interesting. And I was quite enthused to learn this about my ancestry, given my passion for growing my own food. Anyway, back to the garden. And Sunday evening I was at home and I let all my chickens out to roam the vegetable patch a bit more. Now, they're getting on a bit better. Now, I've had the two new for over a week, or over 2 weeks now, isn't it? But they've been in a coop together. And this was the first time they've been allowed out in the vegetable patch. And that went pretty successfully. While I were in the vegetable patch, I was tending to my garden, just doing a bit of tidying up. But I noticed I had a butternut squash forming under one of the leaves. Now, I was really thrilled to see this because, I've said last year, butternut squashes are, I find, a bit difficult, to be honest. I manage them, but they're pretty small. Well, this one is a good size. It's not quite ripe, but I'm thrilled with it. And I will be watching this over in the next few weeks, really. Now, this evening, normally I don't really do much on a Monday because of that's when I do the podcast. But one, I needed some content for the video. And two, I needed a pumpkin. And I've had this pumpkin sitting over the fence, hanging over the fence, really. My wife and I have been watching it get ripe and bigger. And, I needed it harvested for Wednesday evening because I'm appearing on another Vobe show live on Facebook, 8 p.m, Wednesday the 12th. But this time we're doing something different. We're coming from a Regency townhouse in Hove, which I may have mentioned before. It's a house that's been restored to Regency times. But the chef there is a Regency or a historic food recreator. We're taking my pumpkin along and he's going to be cooking something up with it, which I'm really kind of interested to do. But yeah, anyway, this pumpkin I harvested, it was the Big Mac's variety and it weighed in at 8.3 kilograms, which I'm pretty happy with that weight. It's not as big as the one I had last year, but it's a decent size. The Big Mac's variety is obviously more bred for carving, which I have a problem with because I see that as a food waste, which is an annoyance in my opinion. However, it's still going to be edible. Not as good as, say, the Turk's Delight or the edible varieties, but it's still going to be edible. And more importantly, it's 8.3 kilos, which is not going in the compost heap, basically. Now, last night, Sunday night, I did release the weekly harvest report, which details what I have harvested over the last week. Now, it was a bit low because I haven't been down to the allotment as much. But we have harvested quail's eggs, tomatoes, courgettes, salad leaves and herbs. And I bring that up because I've had an email from a listener who asked, he has asked a question that I'm going to feature next week. But the emailer also suggested I should feature the harvests more in the podcast. So I will do that. The report will obviously still come out every Sunday on the blog at theveggrowpodcast.co.uk. Steve has been informing me each week with what he's harvested, which is really, really cool. He's well over £200 every week, pretty much, which is awesome. Michael has added a couple as well. In fact, he asked me when I'll be planting out my broad beans. I've answered that. I'm going to be sowing them around October time. But we'll cover that more as I do it in the future as well. I'll probably do a How I Overwinter Broad Beans podcast, to be honest. So keep listening for that one, Michael. Well, that is the diary up to date. So let's take a look at what the calendar suggests to do for this next week. Now, it reads, plant spring flowering bulbs in groups between summer. No, sorry, let me say that again. Plant spring flowering bulbs in groups between shrubs and herbaceous plants, removing tired summer flowering bedding plants as you work. Prepare pots and bowls of bulbs for indoor flowering and pot them in a dark frost-free place to encourage strong root growth. Bring them into the light in 2 or 3 months' time. Yeah, well, I guess it's coming to the time of sowing garlic and onions, so kind of irrelevant with vegetable growing, but kind of not at the same time. Okay, so I am going to bring on this chat I've had with Jeff in just a moment. Now, Jeff is a mole catcher, which may put a lot of people off, but chatting to Jeff and seeing his show, he loves moles and he is very much about humane control of moles. You'll hear it in his voice. He's very, very passionate about it. And when he first contacted me quite a while ago now, I had a bit of a conflict in myself about this because I don't like seeing any animals suffer or anything like that. But Jeff reassured me that he is incredibly humane about this sort of thing. Or as humane as he can be. He's very passionate about it. In fact, he's trying to get DEFRA recognised, this the mole catcher, because there are mole catchers who may leave their traps for weeks and or days and weeks, and that's not him. He checks on it daily, and he is very, very passionate about it. But anyway, I'll bring him on now, and then we'll come back afterwards and have a bit more. Right, I'm joined today with Jeff Nichols. Is that pronounced right?
That's right.
And you are a mole catcher. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm the bad man in the village.
Bad man. But that's not strictly true. You've been here doing a live show, which I have found to be very informative, as well as knowledgeable. And I can see your passion in your face as you're talking about them. But just explain what your role to the listener is with the mole catching.
It's very simple. I mean, I am a bad man to most people because I actually control moles. I catch moles in devices that people will visualise as things that tear away limbs and things like that, which is totally not true. If it's done correctly, it can be a very, very humane. But the most humane thing about any animal is having the level of welfare in what you do. And gardeners are the key to the welfare for moles. There's no doubt about that. If we place a device in the ground for a mole, then it should be checked within a minimum period of time. And what would be acceptable to most working practices, it would be at least once a day. As a gardener, that is very, very simple. As a mole catcher, it's very, very simple. But there are people who, under circumstances sometimes out of their control, they cannot do this. So they place a device and it'll remain in the ground for 3-4 days, sometimes a week, before it's actually inspected. Totally unacceptable. They go under the intention, well, it'll be dead eventually. And that is not the attitude to have when you're dealing with a British mammal. Let's just say it is a British mammal. Yeah. It's not even classed as a pest. It's classed as a nuisance. Mm. So we must address it correctly.
Yes, yeah, completely. I mean, I've had the odd molehill in my allotment, and it's never bothered me, it's just there. But I know not everyone is in that same way of thinking. Let the airplanes go past. Yeah. and the molehill, it's just dirt, isn't it? It's nothing.
It's good dirt. It's actually subsoil quite often. It's the sort of it's a level of soil that used to go to a garden centre. They would charge you a lot of money for. It's good to reuse it and to top dress your flower borders. It's good for growing vegetables in because the mole has sifted anything harmful out of it to start with.
Yeah.
But quite often, like you say, you can get one mole here. It doesn't mean to say you've got a mole. Because moles, we live like moles. That's the easiest way to explain to people, is we live like moles. The mole has a kitchen where he obtains his food from, like we do. And he'll have somewhere where he sleeps, a bedroom, like we do. But he'll have various kitchens, as is dictated by the weather. Because it's the weather that dictates to his food, and his main diet, as we all know, is worms. But he will take other creatures. This time of the year, be after the leather jackets, which are now doing the crane fly hatch. So we have a crane fly hatch and he'll feed on that just under the surface. You'll get what we call running spooks, where the grass is just lifted slightly. It looks like a badly fitted carpet. And that happens after sort of heavy rainfall, if you've been putting the sprinklers on. You're just bringing that level of food to the surface under the organic layer. And the mole will feed just under that surface. He's not going to stay. He's not digging in for a permanent dwelling, a permanent kitchen. That's just an opportunity he's taking.
Right, yeah.
And gardeners to the moles are a lifeline. if we take someone who's got an allotment or a garden with a veg patch, in the summer, we tend to put the sprinklers on. We put our runner beans in the ground, we put lots of compost in the ground, and we throw gallons and gallons of water at it all the time. We increase that area where the main diet, the worm, is attracted to, and therefore shortly coming after will be a mole. And if we take that mole out and create that vacant premise, it's like us. We find a house that's vacant, we move in, and the first thing we do is we redecorate, put in a new bathroom, we make it as we want it. But one thing we never change is the staircase, the link between where we sleep and where we obtain our food. And as a mole catcher, that is the link that we look for. And as a gardener, that's the link you should be looking for. Uh-huh. It's the perimeter of your property to the first mole hill he throws up. That's the link you're looking for. Because that tunnel will never change. That is the staircase. Very easy when you understand it.
Sure. Now, for those worrying about what happens to the corked moles, what do you personally do with them?
Right, well, there's different devices that you can purchase that actually are used against the mole. Now, there is not a mole trap in the world at the moment that kills a mole instantly, despite marketing claims. Back in 2008, I did a lot of testing on mole traps, and we discovered working with veterinaries that it just doesn't happen because of the anatomy of the mole. What people don't realise is that a mole is defended all the way around by nature, but it's got one vulnerable point, and that vulnerable point is its belly. So anything that encloses on the side, any trap that encloses on a sideways movement, is the mole has a natural defence. If we take the mole apart and look at the bone structure, his scapular bones, or our shoulder blades, they're thin bones that run parallel to his spine. So he's got two guards down his side. Now when a mole runs, he runs with his front paws in a forward position. If we do that, our shoulders naturally come forward, our shoulder blades go back, and the scapular bones of the mole form a line of defence down the side. So anything enclosed on the side is restraining. It's a restraint until the mole dies of asphyxiation. It doesn't. It dies of exhaustion, it dies of starvation or dehydration. Right. That's what it's dying of. However, if you was to use a tunnel trap, the barrel trap, as some people call it, the duffer's trap, this trap is designed to strike the mole from below into the chest region, the only point where the mole has got no natural defence, because he usually runs with his belly on the floor. So we've found the vulnerable point. However, the strike must be with enough force and in the right part of the anatomy to create the right effect. And the effect we want to create is unconsciousness. The trap will inflict unconsciousness through a quick shock, which can impart a cardiac arrest if it strikes it in the chest region, but it also attacks the pleural space. And if we can attack the mole's pleural space from below with enough force, we can cause a hemothorax or a tension hemothorax, where the lungs fill with air, fill with blood, and whilst in a state of unconsciousness where it's feeling no pain, it just stops breathing and it dies humanely. Anything that closes in on the side, also you have to worry about the travel distance, and the travel distance for most devices that close in from the side is minimal, and quite often the mole's body is in contact with the jaws or the device at the point of release. There's not even a snap. It's a squeeze, it's a very slow squeeze, and it restrains the mole, it does not actually strike it. So there's a lot of technicalities in things to understand about catching a mole.
Sure, yeah. And I've heard you on your show say that the things we can buy from garden centres that vibrate the ground are useless.
Yeah, it does exactly the opposite to what the manufacturers actually claim, because as I say in my show, vibrations to a mole means two things. Yes, it means a predator, but it also means food. And I always say, you don't take my word for it, nature doesn't lie. I mean, you see the birds stamping on the ground. Why do they stamp on the ground? Ringworms. So why do we have worm charming championships? How do they do it? We make vibrations, encourage worms to that particular location. So anything that buzzes in the ground creates vibrations, attracts the food, and therefore, shortly after, you get the mole.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I mean, Mother Nature has a wonderful way of creating these systems and everything works in harmony, and mole is just another version of that, isn't it?
Yeah, the mole is the most misunderstood creature. So it's a British mammal, it gets a bad deal, and there's no need for him to get a bad deal. Yes, we're not going to stop controlling moles. We won't stop controlling moles, because yes, they do damage that gardeners won't tolerate. But I think gardeners are the key to, they're very much the key to the welfare of moles. Because if a mole is to be controlled, it's usually the gardeners that undertake that control, or someone who has a garden, who cares for their garden, who requests that service from another person. And if we was to take on the line of, well, this provide a level of welfare whilst doing it, and the person, whoever it is, puts that device in the ground, they therefore have a personal responsibility to come back and check that device within a minimum period of time. And as I say, the next day is probably the best working problem, because you can place the device today, go back tomorrow, and there's no excuse. If you place a device today, you know you have an obligation to go tomorrow.
Yeah.
There's no saying, oh, I'll go next week, or I've got some other things to do. You've already committed to that device, and you have to make sure that device is not inflicted any unnecessary suffering.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. And if you expelled, for me anyway, is that moles are not blind?
No, they're definitely not blind. They actually see better than we do. I film moles. I do a training course, and on the training course I show evidence of moles moving in the tunnels. The secret of learning about moles is actually spending as much time as you can with them, and that's not just removing them or taking their lives, it's actually studying them. And I film them in the ground with footage, and from that footage I understand a lot, and you can see the mole using his eyes on the footage. But what we understand with the mole is, what we don't realise with the mole is, he can see UV light and he can see ultraviolet light, and the big key is ultraviolet light and infrared light. To film the mole in the ground, it's total darkness. They live in a permanently dark world, so they don't need good eyesight, so people say. But however, they have got better either, because they can see this two light spectrums that we can't.
Sure.
To film them in the ground, I have to use infrared light. I have to use cameras, because the cameras can't see without infrared light. The infrared light to a mole is like leaving the light on. And you can see the moles react to that infrared light. The first thing is they run up to the camera, look into the camera, smile, and then within 5 or 6 seconds, the camera is completely buried with dirt. And to break another myth, what people don't realise is the mole moves the soil with his back legs, not his front legs. He claws at it with his front legs. He turns around and moves it with his back legs. And seeing that footage on film, it's become obvious, because the mole lives in a very harsh environment. He's only, the only predator he may have is the weasel. They've got very few predators. They're only predators themselves. But if a weasel does come down, the mole will get away from him anyway, because the mole can live in what we call a hypercapnic environment, which is low levels of oxygen. So he just moves into lower soil where there's low levels of oxygen. Weasels can't follow. But if he does get caught, the first thing he's going to do is he's going to backfill the tunnel. And he'll do that with his back legs, so he's facing away from the danger.
Right, yeah.
Which is why it's so obvious when you see it on the camera. It stumped me for many years, and then years ago when I saw the footage, I thought, why do they, every time they come with their back legs. You see them do a flip like a swimmer would in a swimming pool, and then all the soil starts coming towards the camera. Sure. And for 7 seconds of footage, you've got over an hour of clearing the camera out of dirt, which has been packed into it. But it's very rewarding to see that animal in its own environment.
Yeah. Now, I'm a big fan of a method of gardening called no-dig gardening. Have you heard of that?
I have heard of it, yes.
And does that help the moles?
It's lazy man's garden, I think they call it.
I wouldn't say that, but...
The moles don't mind, because if you leave the environment as it is, then the moles will put it as they want it anyway. Mm. And the more disturbance you do to the moles' environment, the more damage you can do to yours. So basically, they probably would go alongside that. If you don't dig, then they'll do the digging for you anyway, I think. Anyway.
Yeah.
You're still going to fertilise your ground, you're still going to water the ground. So when the moles come, they will do the digging for you. And they'll do a better job than we can.
Yeah. Yeah, along with the increase in worm activity.
Once you start... But I mean, they like carrot fly larvae, they like leather jackets, they do like a lot of things that the gardeners don't want in the ground. There's no reason to... I go out to catch moles, and sometimes I go into people's gardens and say, we don't need to catch this mole. And they say, why not? I say, because the garden doesn't really warrant the mole going, because the mole's probably doing a better landscaping job than you are. You know, the grass is 6 inches deep, there's a fridge at the bottom of the garden, and people want the mole out because they've never had a mole before, and they think they must remove it. But normally, under circumstances, the mole's not staying. Quite often, the mole is not staying. As I say, he won't dig for no reason. He's there for a reason. If he's going to stay, he'll do damage. He'll create these kitchens where he's going to obtain that food from, and he will come back to that kitchen time and time again, because that's where the food is. Sometimes it's circumstances change that make the mole do the digging in that area, and you can go there and you can say, look, this mole will be gone in 36 hours. When the breeding season's on, people get a couple of mole hills go across the lawn. It's just a tunnel that's been opened up by the first male whose testosterone level's high. He's come through, he's cleaned out an old tunnel. You place a device in the ground, the next mole you catch is not the one that's in the damage. He's the one that's using the same tunnel as his mates just cleaned out for him, because they're all on the move to the migration to find a mate. If you left those two mole hills alone, probably 20, 30 moles could have passed underneath it without you ever knowing.
Wow.
And then it's you that disturbs the tunnel that causes a bit of subsidence. The next mole comes in, he has to dig it out. You think you've still got a mole. So in the breeding time, there's quite often a time where you can say, well, let's just let these moles do what they want to do at the moment. Mm-hmm. If you've got a female, you'll know about it, because she will do an awful lot of damage, because she's the one that's got to be feeding the forthcoming young. So she will create large areas of damage, but rows of molehills, the odd molehill here and there, between sort of late February, early March, depending on when the soil starts to warm. It's dictated by nature when she decides to warm the soil, when it all starts off. And not all moles come into season at the same time, which is very, very clever. Because nature then doesn't have this glut of moles moving around. They move in space and periods of time, and the females don't come into season at the same time either. So a male finds a female in the territory, she's not in season, he's not going to mate with her, he's not interested, he's got other things on his mind, he goes off, leaves her, and in 2 or 3 weeks time she comes into season, another mole comes in and she will mate. This way all the females are not pregnant all at the same time.
Right, yeah.
It's very clever. Yeah. and there's lots of reasons. I mean, we can talk about moles for days, weeks.
we could.
And what we have to remember, and one of the things I will say to a lot of people, is we have to remember that moles are what we call an altricial animal. So should we, as a mole catcher, I say this, should I be controlling moles between sort of like late February and June down here in the south? Because if I take out a female, she's left with a litter that's not going to wean. And is that an act of welfare? Is that an act of unnecessary suffering?
Yeah.
It's a question that will be argued in many and many a bar, in many a garden club, and many a website for years to come.
Absolutely, yeah. So if anybody listening has any questions they want to ask you, how can they contact you and find out more about what
you can contact me. I the easiest way to do it is I've got an email address. The best one to get me on would be Mole Course, M-O-L-E, and then course, C-O-U-R-S-E, at AOL.com. That will get through to, I run a training course, and those emails will come in, and I know it's an educational email with a question. So when something comes through on that one, I know that someone's got a bit of a problem, or they want to come on a course, or just got a question about some technical problem.
Sure. Well, lovely to have you anyway. Thank you very much. It's been really informative.
It's been a pleasure. I hope people out there understand the mole a little bit more.
I hope so too.
Well, there we go, everyone. That was Jeff Nichols, the mole catcher. Now, he was an absolute delight to chat to. I spoke to him for quite a while after. He was kind of on his lunch break, I guess. I met him at Rumsey, and he was doing several talks on moles. And if you ever get a chance to see his live show, I highly recommend it, because it's very entertaining and very educational. I learned so much about moles that I did not know. A kind of a animal we don't really think about, aren't they? But no, he was very passionate about what he does. And he spoke to me about his filming of moles that he's done with several people, and how he expects the film crew to come to where the mole is instead of getting a mole and taking it to them. That way the mole can be released back into its home, which is really, really encouraging to see. Now, he's given me a book that I've been reading, and he's got several books out. They'll all be found on his website. I'll add links to that. But he also runs courses. And in fact, he's got a course coming up on the 22nd of September in a couple of weeks' time. He has said, if anybody listening to this wants to attend a course, email him and he'll give you all some sort of discount. Just mention that you've heard him from the Veg Grower podcast. Absolutely a pleasure to chat to. It really is. I highly recommend it. I know some people will not like the thought of a mole being caught because it's an animal, and quite rightly. I think the bottom line is that there's always going to be people who are going to catch these animals. There's always going to be people who don't want these animals on their lawn and what have you. And the question you have to ask yourself, do you want somebody who's going to catch them humanely, or do you want somebody who's not going to do it? That's going to be the two options, humanely, or who's going to leave it there for days to die very, very quick, very, very slowly, sorry. Those are the two choices. Think about it. What would you prefer? Anyway, enough on that. Now, I was thinking of doing this as a bit of a sponsor section, but no, Lee from the Skinny Jean Gardener, he's contacted me about something that's happening this week. So I said to him, hey, can you send me over some audio that I can play in? Which he did. Pretty much within a few minutes, it was done. Great. So I'll play that on now. and then we'll come back and announce the winners of the competitions.
Hey, what's going on, dude? And hello to you, dear listener. What's going on? It's the Skinny Jean Gardener here, and I have been kindly given a few minutes/hours, it will be minutes, don't worry, to talk about a brand new thing coming to YouTube on Wednesday. So thanks very much for giving me the time, Rich, for this. It's very exciting. Right, we have talked quite a lot on both of our podcasts about content creating. It's really important to get the garden message out there. Hey, we're getting the garden message out there, guys. But there's some amazing people doing some incredible things. There's some amazing podcasters. I've been very lucky to be featured on one. Hello, mate. Wink, wink. Also, there's some amazing bloggers. There's amazing YouTubers as well. And just generally, people doing incredible stuff in the garden industry. And I get this. I got this last year, actually, at another show where... And it's not their fault, so this is not a massive dig at the BBC. But the BBC can't show everything, okay? And there's some incredible stuff going on, which just isn't put out there and given the attention it needs. So what I want to do, and what I am doing, is creating a brand new program, a brand new YouTube channel, just for this. And every single Wednesday, there'll be a new YouTube program going up on the Garden 7 channel. Garden 7 is a brand new company that I've just set up for content creating for brands. But we want to do this, me and the team want to do this, so we can get other creators out there to other people, to new audiences. This is going to be the program where all the YouTube channels, all the podcasts and all the bloggers want to be on. And we're going to do it for nothing. We ain't here to earn any money from it. We just think that there's some amazing people out there that really need to be shown off to a new audience. So this is what we want to do with this YouTube channel. So what we're doing is we're getting different content creators to send us a video about what they're doing. And we've had a few in. We've had a few in, Rich, haven't we? We've had a few. Rich will be on the podcast. Not the podcast, sorry. On the YouTube channel this Wednesday. That's right. This Wednesday is going to be the first episode uploaded. I'm really excited about it. It's going to be something different. Hopefully you'll enjoy it. And we can totally mould it into whatever we want. It's totally audience-led. So if you go and watch it and you think, this is pants, doesn't matter. Just send a little email. We'll twist it about a bit. Let's see what we can do with it. And also, I got this the other day. Someone said to me, can I be on it? I'm this, I can do this, I do that. Like, if you've got something to say and you can create a video and you want to be on the show, that's absolutely awesome. Just get in contact. hello@garden7.co. is the email address, or lee@skinnygeangardener.co.uk. And yeah, we'll get you on the program. It'd be awesome. If you've got something to say, then drop me a line. We can work out how we can create a video. If you're not sure about videos and how to create them, then we can talk about that. And you can be on the Garden 7 program every Wednesday. So if you're up for it, if you want to see a podcaster from the Veg Grower podcast on, then check it out on Wednesday. It'll be on the social medias. I'll chuck it all over the social medias. Hopefully people will share that as well. But if you want to make sure you don't miss it, guys, then you can subscribe on YouTube. It's the Garden 7 YouTube channel. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you have an awesome podcast. I'm enjoying it, right, guys? It's a good... He's pre-recorded. This is a pre-record, so I don't actually know what he's talking about this week. But I'm a big supporter of this podcast, so what do I want to say? Big up, big fist bump to everyone that's listening. Yeah, I've got nothing. Enough ums for now. Have a fantastic week, and I shall speak to you soon, no doubt.
Well, that's my good friend Lee. Thank you so much for that, buddy. I really appreciate not only you just doing that recording, but everything you're doing for the industry and for us little bloggers, YouTubers, and everything like that. And if you are a blogger, YouTuber, please get in touch with him. He will work his arse off for you. If he doesn't, I'll make sure he does anyway. Sorry, mate. Anyway, I was close to wrapping up, but I have got to announce now the winner from the Facebook group. Now, I said each week for the next few weeks, everybody that comments in the Facebook group, their name will be entered into a hat, and I will draw their name, or one winner each week, who will win a pack of seeds. And this week, the winner is Stephen. Stephen Ticehurst. I don't normally like to do surnames, but no. I'll email you tomorrow to get your address, and I will send you over a pack of seeds. I think it's a pack of tomato seeds this week. Well done, buddy. Thank you for joining in the group. I know you're a new member. Really liking what you're doing as well, which is really cool to see. Really, really pleased that people listening are participating. I've had so much communication this last week. It's been fantastic, and I really appreciate every single one of you. Now, I'm going to continue with the Facebook group competition each week, as I said, but I'm going to run a bigger competition between now and Halloween. I'm not sure what day Halloween falls on. It must be a Tuesday, because I remember last year it was a... it's a Tuesday. So I'll run it till that Tuesday. And you will win a large selection of seeds. £20 worth of seeds. I will go out and buy. If I can get anything else that I can throw in there, I will, of course, throw it in there. And all you've got to do to be in it is share the Veg Grower podcast. So it could be Twitter, Facebook, email, I don't know. Just share it and let me know you've done it. Most things I can tell, but yeah. Everybody that shares it, again, everyone's name will go into a hat. And I will really, really appreciate it. Now, even if you won before or done anything like that before, you will not be excluded. I'm open to everyone. As I say, I'm the type that if I set a rule, I stick to it. So that's what we will do. Now, I'm rambling on a bit now. I'm I'm good. So thank you very much for listening. We will be back again next week, where we will be talking about badgers. The question was how to deal with badgers, so I'm going to discuss that a little on from my experience. So that's to come next week. But until then, please take care, and I'll see you again next time.